tonight's the title of tonight's talk is The Bliss of Blamelessness. It's the second of a series it's kind of a long series because I started thinking that I wanted to do a series on working with difficult emotion, and in order to do that, wanted to set some context. The Buddha, this wonderful quote that I came across that I've put on a little piece of paper and stuck it in my notebook here because I like it so much. He said, that gladness connected to the wholesome, I call an equipment of mind for overcoming ill will and hostility. So in order to talk about working with the difficult, we really need to kind of couch it. We need to contain it in the gladness of mind and heart. And so then I thought, well, I can't do that in just one talk. Let's do that in a series of talks. So anyway, this is the second of the series of talks that's the framework for the real talks that I'm going to be doing, or something like that. So last time I spoke about the first of what Ayakima has a little summary of four different kinds of happiness. I've added one and probably will add one more that the Buddha spoke of. And last time I talked about the most basic kind of happiness, sensory happiness. And we're all experiencing that these days, aren't we? You know, with this bursting forth of spring and things turning green, and just while you stand there and look, you know, it's just like they're just coming forth. And just how wonderful and beautiful it is. And the Buddha really encourages us to take that in. It can be a little confusing sometimes. We can sort of think, you know, because the practices can seem so austere that it can seem like we're supposed to like really, you know, be diligent. And there is a place for diligence and ardency. But without this quality of balance, that really receiving the goodness, it just becomes too dry and too hard, and we would give up really very quickly. So it's true that sensory happiness has its limits. It changes. I am, even as we speak, mourning the end of my daffodils. You know, and I can really feel that kind of hanging on. And indeed, even as they blossom, there's a little edge I can really notice of just really touching into the tenderness of the impermanence, even as they're like fully there. You know, it's like you can't hang on to it. So even as wonderful as it is, it passes. And so the limitation of sensory happiness is exactly that. First of all, we can't always get what we want. And secondly, even when we do, it passes. So it's a fundamental, it's a really basic goodness and a basic kind of happiness. Ayakima says, the more a person is purified, the more their sense contacts will also be purified. A pure mind and heart will find enjoyment in the simplest things. In a beautiful sky, lovely greenery, a pleasant conversation. All the real goodness of that. And Rick Hansen, Jeff mentioned he's coming in a couple of weeks. From a neuroscience point of view, he actually echoes. It's so interesting to read neuroscience these days because so much of it is providing some kind of physical evidence for what the Buddha actually saw in his own experience. And so neuroscience is saying, you know, really notice these positive experiences, the whole movement of positive psychology. Notice these positive experiences. Really let them come into awareness. And indeed, notice them in the body. I was reading recently that there's a lot of evidence now that we actually have two brains. Who knew? We have two brains. We have this brain that we're sort of familiar with, this one up here, but there's actually a brain in our gut that sends information to our cortex, our cerebral cortex. So that whole sense of empathic attunement or gut instinct, you know, they're really beginning to document the physiology of it. And so when the Buddha says, the Buddha invites us to really kind of contemplate and really bring awareness into our bodies, it's actually really opening awareness to include not just the conceptual mind, but to include all that information, all that goodness of the gut. And so, you know, somebody was saying, you know, it's sort of like that sense you get, like if you see a beautiful sunrise or a beautiful sunset, and there may not be any particular emotion attached, but there's a sort of gut sense of the pleasant, the goodness. And so this gut sense really probably is more closely related to the Buddhist teachings on the pleasant, the unpleasant, and the neutral. You know, this sense of really taking in. And so to really let the goodness, let the pleasant, let the goodness be there. And Rick invites us to remember, he says, what is already going all right in your life? We tend to focus on, you know, what needs improvement. What goals have you recently attained? What things have you recently accomplished? What are you glad about? What are you grateful for? You know, to really bring those questions and those contemplations alive in our lives. And so that was really the focus of that earlier talk, that first kind of happiness. Really looking to see, what is it that I need now? You know, do I need a balance? Do I need to really bring more attention to that? Just the beauty of the day, to just that kind of goodness, what's going well. Tonight, though, I wanted to add another layer to these five kinds of happiness. And this is a talk on sila, or virtue, or morality. As I was thinking about it, I was thinking, well, to move from all the beauty of the dogwoods and the red buds to talking about morality, because people are like, well, that's kind of a bummer, you know. You know, because sometimes the sense of morality, really we can focus so much on what's wrong. You know, what we're not doing well enough, or what we're not doing well. And I don't know about you, but I had a lot of indoctrination as a child in my little Catholic school about, you know, being good and following the rules. And so one can either do like I did and become like obsessively good, which was real kind of a pain in the butt, but or to be obsessively, you know, rejecting of the rules and going against them, but just, you know, kind of be encumbered, if you will, by some sense of what's right and what's wrong, following the rules. Joseph Goldstein tells a story when he was in Burma with Upandita, one of the really great Buddhist teachers. Upandita told him to contemplate his sila, to contemplate his morality. And Joseph says that he was really kind of chagrined about it, because he thought Upandita was telling him he was like being bad, you know, and he really needed to kind of shape up and really think about, you know, what he was doing here. And when he talked to Upandita about it, he said, no, no, no. He said what he was trying to do was inviting him into ease and into the gladness of being aware of his own virtue, of his own goodness. And it was just exactly the opposite of what Joseph thought he was inviting him into. He was encouraging Joseph to, quote, brighten his mind and arouse more joy by contemplating his morality, by contemplating his own seal. So that the Buddhist teaching really is about that. It's about brightening your mind and arousing more joy. It's not about that list of things that I, you know, checked off when I was going to confession. And as always, the Buddha invites us to begin with some understanding about, well, what does he mean by morality or virtue? And then look and see for ourselves. Really, how does it work? And so I want to do inquire into maybe both aspects of that tonight. And as I was thinking about what, you know, well, what is morality? I was thinking, you know, I have this new little toy, this new voice recorder. And, you know, along with the voice recorder came this whole little book, you know, this whole little thing. It says how it works, you know. And the other night I had to kind of look up. There was something I was trying to figure out about it. And it's like, what page is, you know, how does this work? And morality is like that. You know? That morality is really, the Buddha is teaching us how things work. You know, page 18. You know, this is how things work. If you want to be happy, you can't be happy unless you're really practicing some form of morality. I've told this story many times, but it always cracks me up. Some years ago, there was a program on HBO that was The Sopranos. You remember that program? And it used to just absolutely crack me up. I watched it a few times. That here was this man who lied, cheated, stole, killed, murdered, did just everything. And then he was going to a therapist. He wanted to be happy. You know? It's just, you know, this is like, what's wrong with this picture? Ajahn Chah says it's sort of like, you know, you take a piece of cloth and without washing it, you try to dye it. And what it does is if you try to add our practice onto a life that really isn't paying attention to the instruction book, that it just won't work. We won't have the fruits of practice if we're not really paying attention to the, if you will, the morality instruction book. So it's not about, you know, naughty, naughty, naughty. It's about brighten your mind and arousing more joy and enabling the practice to actually work well. You know, this is what's needed in order for us to really gain the fruits of our practice. And so to first see and then to be able to abandon behaviors that just aren't working well, like Tony Soprano, you know, it's like, well, you know, Tony, maybe if you stop murdering people, you know that, to just see, you know, like, oh, right, you know, maybe that's not such a good idea. And so maybe there's a way of being happy that I'm in control of, that I have some evidence, some ability. In the Metta Sutta, this is what the Sutta says, this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able, this is the instruction book, let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, that's on page 13, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Again, we can get a little twinge on that one. That one, you know, the wise are out there shaking their finger. But what the Buddha is referring to there is look to people who know how things work. You know, call that technical support guy and say, how does this work? So when he's talking about what the wise would or would not reprove, he's really inviting us to pay attention to people who've really had more experience with this and learn from them. The Buddha often talks in the suttas about the wholesome, you know, cultivating what's wholesome, the gladness connected to the wholesome. And I'm going to invite you just for a minute to either by yourself contemplate or maybe with someone sitting near to you, what does that mean? What does it mean for something to be wholesome? You know, we sort of like, okay, wholesome, right? But how do we know what's what is being skilled in goodness, and wholesome. If it's not just a rule, you know, what's wholesome? What does wholesome mean? So just take a moment and contemplate, either by yourself or if you like with a partner sitting next to you. What does it mean? Cultivating the wholesome. So what did you come up with, anyone? What is wholesome? How do we know what's wholesome? Rick?
I don't think my group wants me to report, but we spent a lot of, this is not the way to start off this discussion, but we had difficulty on conceptual levels. Our outcomes, as long as it's not 2% low.
Say, I missed a link there.
Wholesome, you thought.
Oh, uh-huh. Yeah, it's not 2%. Nice. Yeah. So some sense of being like coherent and integrated in a large way.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Not 2%. Good. Yeah.
We were thinking maybe when I hear the word whole, I think of something that's not just parts.
Nice.
Everything. And that maybe whatever you do needs to be good for other people.
So whole, not just part.
Right.
And whatever you do should be good for other people. So the whole of you and the whole of all. Nice. I see some grins around. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Yeah?
We were a little schizophrenic.
You were what?
A little schizophrenic.
Schizophrenic, yeah.
On one side, we had a wholeness as in whole food, nutritious, good. Then on the other side was the sense of our actions not having harmful residue.
Nice. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So on the one side, whole food, nutritious, and on the other side, not harm.
Right.
Not bad. Nice. Yeah.
I was really struck by how my understanding of cultivating goodness has changed, because I always had thought about cultivating as something to do.
Yes.
And so it still fell in that old framework of something to do.
That you're not quite doing well enough yet. Yeah. Cultivating goodness is, Jackie says, she's always thought of it as something to do. And what's changed?
And what has shifted is that it seems to me what the intention is, the wholesome intention, is to create or allow the conditions that let the goodness manifest.
Yeah. So that really the intention is to allow the conditions that let the goodness manifest and really let it grow and take over. I think of gardening, in the spring, and really removing the weeds really is just allowing the space for the goodness to flower and be nourished. It is interesting, isn't it, how our own conditioning, that kind of striving mentality can really distort it and really make us either just kind of tediously trying to be something, trying to be good, or just say, I'm not going to follow those rules. I'm really, really be resistant to it. And so it really can present a problem in both directions. Yeah. Good. Zen, anything? Thank you. The Buddha speaks of looking to see if something causes affliction. He was talking to his son, Rahula, and he asked him, what do you think a mirror is for? And Rahula says, well, it's for reflecting. And he says, in the same way, Rahula, bodily actions, verbal actions, and mental actions are to be done with repeated reflection. Whenever you do a physical action, a verbal action whenever you speak, whenever you do a mental action, thought, emotion. You should reflect on it. Emotion, we're going to get there sooner or later. You should reflect on it. This action I want to do, would it lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both? Would it be an unskillful action with painful consequences, painful results? If on reflection, Rahula, you know that it would lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both, it would be an unwholesome bodily action with painful consequences, painful results, then any action of that sort is absolutely unfit for you to do. But if on reflection you know that it would not cause affliction, it would be a skillful action with pleasant consequences, pleasant results, then any action of that sort is fit for you to do. So it really requires that kind of really consideration or contemplation.
Can you tell me the definition of affliction?
Affliction, I think here the Buddha speaks of the kind of wholeness that you were naming earlier. And, you know, there's the wholeness of the body, there's the wholeness of relationship with one another, there's the wholeness of our integrated interaction with the ecology. And the Buddha just kind of keeps growing this wholeness so that there is just awareness that includes everything. So that I think affliction would be something that obscures wholeness in some way. And it can obscure wholeness at every level, you know, at a kind of very simple, just at every level. And ultimately, the Buddha says, you know, affliction would be not being enlightened, you know, that we're really not seeing clearly the wholeness of everything. Okay? He offered precepts, and there are just all kinds of different ways of thinking and reading about the precepts. Monastics have, I forget how many, hundreds of them. But for us lay people, there are 5 precepts that the Buddha invites us to consider. Refraining from killing, refraining from stealing, refraining from unwholesome speech, refraining from sexual misconduct, and refraining from intoxicants that cloud the mind. And there's just, I mean, we could have a whole series, we actually did one year, have a whole series of weeks of inquiring into these precepts. There, Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Zen master, frames them in, he doesn't frame them as refraining, but he talks about the 5 wonderful precepts. I'm going to read them to you because they're so really lovely. They're a little long, but I think you'll appreciate it. He says, the first one is, aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I vow to cultivate compassion and to learn the ways of protecting the lives of people, animals, and plants. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to condone any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, and in my way of life. So the Buddha's inviting us, a little instruction manual, that if we kill, we're a little bit like Tony Soprano. Number 2, aware of the suffering caused by exploitation, social injustice, stealing, and oppression, I vow to cultivate loving kindness and learn ways to work for the well-being of people, animals, and plants. I vow to practice generosity by sharing my time, energy, and material resources with those who are in real need. I am determined not to steal and not to possess anything that should belong to others. I will respect the property of others, but I will do everything in my power to prevent others from human suffering of other species. That looks, it doesn't read right. Number 3 is aware of the suffering caused by sexual misconduct. I vow to cultivate my responsibility and learn ways to protect the safety and integrity of individuals, couples, families, and society. I am determined not to engage in sexual relations without love and long-term commitment. To preserve the happiness of myself and others, I am determined to respect my commitments and the commitments of others. I will do everything in my power to protect children from sexual abuse and to protect families from being broken by sexual misconduct. Number four is aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to listen to the suffering of others. I vow to cultivate loving speech and deep listening in order to bring joy and happiness to others and relieve others of their suffering. Knowing that words can create happiness or bring suffering, I vow to learn to speak truthfully with words that can inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I am determined not to spread news that I do not know to be certain and not to criticize or condemn things that I am not sure of. I will refrain from uttering words that can cause division or discord or that can cause the family or the community to break. I will make every effort to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, even small. And number five is aware of the suffering caused by unmindful consumption. I vow to cultivate good health, both physical and mental, for myself, my family, and my society by practicing mindful eating, drinking, and consuming. I vow to ingest only items that preserve peace, well-being, and joy in my body, in my consciousness, and in the collective body and consciousness of my family and society. I am determined not to use alcohol or any other intoxicants or to ingest foods or other items that contain toxins, such as certain TV programs, magazines, books, films, and conversations. I am aware that to damage my body and my consciousness with these poisons is to betray my ancestors, my parents, my society, and future generations. And all of these precepts, of course, can be looked at in a more in the more positive way to cultivate kindness and protect all beings, to realize sufficiency, to practice generosity and gratitude, to cultivate good use of my sexual energy, to respect my relationship commitments, to cultivate loving speech and deep listening, and to practice mindful eating and consuming. So in keeping with what Jackie was pointing to a little bit ago, I want to invite another contemplation, and this time not for a discussion, but just for your individual contemplation for a moment. And it's very similar to something we did in the meditation, to tune into a time when you actually practiced one of these precepts. When I was doing this, I have developed this little practice. You know the stink bugs? Sure you do. The little stink bugs. And I always take them outside, and so I pick them up in my hand and I carry them outside. And over time, over these months of stink bugginess, I've developed this little affectionate relationship with these stink bugs. So that would be something. I was like, oh, okay. So I'm refraining from killing. And so the invitation is to bring into your awareness some little thing like that, not a big deal, where it has to do with refraining from killing or refraining from stealing, from taking what is not freely given, or refraining from unwholesome speech, or refraining from sexual misconduct, or refraining from ingesting poisons of some sort into your body. So just pick one little thing. And then let your awareness drop into your body and just let yourself notice that kind of awareness of the body that Rick Hansen's talking about. What's it like in your body to bring that quality into awareness? I'll just give you a minute to just contemplate that. See if you can locate it in the physical body. that gladness connected to the wholesome, I call an equipment of mind for overcoming ill will and hostility. So it's that gladness right there, even if it's tiny, that gladness connected to the wholesome that is your equipment of mind. And another dimension that I just wanted to point to, again, it's one that many of you have pointed to already, is how do we really let ourselves be aware of these guidelines, this instruction manual, without using it against ourselves? You know, without that kind of, you know, even as we kind of look, and, you know, Sharon says, you know, bring into awareness some quality of goodness, and, you know, there's a, yeah, but that's not really good enough. Or, yeah, but that was contaminated by, you know, this. Or, I don't really usually do that. You know, all those kind of things, that place where we tend to use these precepts, use these guidelines against ourselves, use them as self-criticism. And there, I think it's really cultivating the difference between discernment and judgment. You know, that it's possible to see clearly that it's raining outside. It isn't necessary that we judge either the rain or ourselves for getting wet. So to really kind of practice a quality of discernment. So if I'm not meeting one of the guidelines, it's helpful to discern that. The Buddha, again, he's talking to Rahula, and he says, before you do, I can't find it quickly. He says, before you do an action, think about whether or not it's wholesome, whether or not it's good. And then while you're doing it, think about whether or not it's good, it's wholesome. And after you did it, think about whether or not it's wholesome. And it's that after, it's a sort of the while and the after, you know, that he's not saying, and if it isn't, then beat yourself up and go back to being unwholesome. That's not what he's saying. He's saying afterwards, he said, just use it as information. Cultivate discernment so that you can see and say, oh, that didn't really quite work. You know, I missed something yesterday. Yeah, Cora.
I'm wondering how that comes into this, because I think...
How does it come in? What do you think?
Well, can you... I guess bringing discernment might be possible. You know,
yeah.
You say, oh, gosh, I there were so many things where I thought, you know, just in the last day, gosh, I could have done that a whole heck of a lot better.
Yeah.
And I can say I forgive myself. How do I bring that into the body?
Yeah.
Especially when I become more aware of where the lack of forgiveness is.
Well, I think, you know, we certainly can inquire into that, how do we bring it in, but I think here what I would point you to is cultivating the gladness of mind that offers that kind of spaciousness. Remember I started saying, you know, I want to be talking about difficult emotions, but that if we start just talking about difficult emotions or difficult experiences and we don't have that quality of spaciousness that you're pointing to, then it just becomes a list of rules that you put on the refrigerator and you're failing constantly because, golly, we're just people, aren't we? You know, we're just human beings. And so to really, I'm going to just flip that on its head and invite a cultivation of gladness, of goodness, of really, you know, can I, even when in these moments where, well, I didn't do that so well, can there be at least an equal amount of attention to contemplating your own virtues? I did that during the meditation.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of trouble with that.
Yeah, we do. So to bring awareness, and you know, again, it goes back to this, the Buddhist quote, the gladness connected to the wholesome, I call an equipment of mind. I love that, you know, an equipment of mind. You know, it's like, you know, you're mountain climbing and you've got your, you know, your ropes and your little things that stick into, you know. So the gladness connected to the wholesome is the equipment of mind that enables us to be kind and generous and forgiving. Not ignorant. The Buddha's saying, don't be ignorant. You know, notice it. But to say, oh, you know, it's like your golf swing or something like that. You say, oh, that one wasn't quite, I'm not quite ready for the Masters. You know, but oh, okay, what did I do that I want to try to do a little differently the next time? Is the discernment. But the equipment of mind is to really appreciate our goodness. And there's a whole sutta where the Buddha talks about contemplating our virtues. In Arinsar dialogue practice, sometimes in inside dialogue retreats, we have a whole dialogue where we invite people to speak to one another about their virtues. And for sometimes it can be really quite challenging. If I ask you to speak for 20 minutes to three other people about your virtues, but go home, you know, but contemplate it, you know. What would I say for 20 minutes if I was speaking to someone about my virtues? I can see some deep breaths coming out. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Say is one thing,
do
is another.
Say, yeah?
Say is one thing, do is another.
Well, maybe to start with saying it and then to just see, is there any place in my body where there's some resonance with that? To really kind of bring it into the gut. Because if somebody said, you know, you're really the most worthless, horrible person in the whole entire universe, your gut would kind of respond to that and say, well, you know, that's not really completely true. You know, so to really kind of listen to that quality of heart and mind that knows that there's some goodness there. Yeah, so it can be a difficult practice indeed. So I would invite you to practice it. Yeah. Rick, you've been trying to say something.
Professionally, I've done career counseling, and one of the things that I try to help people do increasingly as I've become more aware of myself is to help them become aware of their strengths.
Beautiful.
And so how does that manifest in their lives? And as time's gone on, it's become clear to me that it's not so much saying, okay, bring this out, but to open up yourselves, the barriers that we're talking about.
Beautiful.
To open up and allow your goodness to
and allow that awareness, right?
The light.
Because otherwise it's like looking at my garden and only seeing the weeds. You know, which of course are there. But there's also a lot of beauty and a lot of goodness. I want to read you one more thing, or maybe two. There's another sutta, which I won't read you the whole sutta, but the Buddha talks about the bliss of blamelessness. You know, the bliss of really recognizing, you know, our own goodness. And that, you know, he's encouraging us to really rest in that awareness and really appreciate that. As with respect to contemplating virtues, we've done this contemplation here before, but he ends it with, he said, you should develop this recollection of virtue while you are walking, while you are standing, while you are sitting, while you are lying down, while you are busy at work, while you are resting in your home, crowded with children. You know, contemplate this recollection of virtue.
Can I ask you one other question?
Sure.
Would that also help you to be able to see more the virtue in other people?
Yes.
And the blamelessness,
and to really be more forgiving with other people.
And
to be more forgiving with other people. Because
we
just see that we're just all You know, what is that thing, you know, be kind because everyone you meet is having a hard day. You know, we're all just muddling through here. I want to read you a poem. You know, I love poetry, and there's another poem by Mary Oliver. It's called The Poem of the One World. She says, "This morning, the beautiful white heron was floating along above the water, and then into the sky of this, the one world we all belong to, where everything, sooner or later, is a part of everything else." Which thought made me feel for a little while quite beautiful myself. So, may your beautiful selves go out into this beautiful world. May you contemplate your goodness, and may it be an equipment of mind for overcoming the difficulties of our lives. Blessings.